Blog Talk Radio.
This is an Open Talk Radio 313 Flash production.
Into another fantabulous episode of the Take It Easy radio show live here on Open Talk Radio 313 The Flash. Had a couple of hiccups in there, probably why I messed up the intro for the radio show. I gave you the podcast intro, fairly similar to the radio show intro, just changed the good morning to all right. But after a few hiccups, we are here on the air on Thursday here on Open Talk Radio 313 The Flash. My name is Kyle, and I will be rolling with you here for the next 56 minutes or so here on a Thursday or Friday or Saturday or however and whenever it is that you are listening. If you're stopping in from our Instagram page or from our podcast, again, I encourage you to please download the podcast and download all the cool stuff here on Open Talk and follow them on Facebook and Instagram at Open Talk Radio 313 The Flash Plus. Okay, we've got all that stuff out of the way. I'm just trying to get into the groove now. We've got a really fun show today. I'm excited because we are bringing back a beloved podcast segment, and we are bringing it to the radio show. Why? Well, didn't really have a place to fit it in, and there's only so much time that we have to do the Mixies Awards, but here we are bringing you the 2021 NBA Mixies Awards. And for those who are new to this proceeding, which is probably most of you, let's explain how the Mixies Awards work. It's been one of the funniest segments I've ever heard on Levitard's show, which I love listening to. Shout out to those guys. And the Mixies Awards are an adapted version of that, where we give out a magical award. We give out lots of awards in a full-on award show to the teams that are hanging around in the mix. We're a month out from the postseason, and these are teams that are just hanging around, staying in the mix, probably going to do all right, but ultimately most are shooting for that first-round exit. And so we should show some love to those teams fighting around in the mix, because many of them won't be remaining with us for much longer. This is the second year we've done it in the NBA. We've done it in the MLB during the pandemic. We did it during football season. We've done the Mixies Awards all over the place here on Take It Easy. And over the past 2 years, it has been one of our favorite segments that people really like. And so I wanted to bring the Mixies Awards for the NBA over to the radio show. We have 15 awards to hand out today, and the reason that we have 15 is because so many teams, which is about half the league, so many teams can make the playoffs this year in the NBA. 20 teams make the playoffs in the NBA this year, so some of these teams won't even make the play-in round, which I've basically been calling the wild card, but it is a play-in round. So if I call it the wild card sometime throughout this episode, just know I mean the play-in round in the NBA this year, where the 10 seed will play the 7 seed and the 9 seed will play the 8 seed in a best-of-three series to kick off the postseason. If I interchange wild card and play in round, just know that's what I mean. And for the 2021 Mixies Awards, because there are so many teams here and because we have a full hour to go through, we won't spend the full hour on the Mixies Awards, although I do like to give a nice little toast to each of the teams throughout the season. And I don't know, I try to find the perfect balance of how funny this is and how many teams are considered for the Mixies. Like, at what point does the joke become stale? Still haven't figured out that exact number yet, but we're rolling with 15 awards here today in the Mixies for your delight and viewership tastes, because we're still a month out, and yet so much is undecided in the NBA, and yet all of it has already been predetermined, because we know who the best teams in the NBA are, we know where each team fits in the tier list, we have a pretty good idea at who's real and who's not, but we still have a lot to decide in terms of seeding that doesn't matter, but it's still fun to have it play out in the NBA. And so, with that, let us commence with the Mixies. I don't really know what we have in terms of sound here. Ooh, I got the hiccups. Nice little lunch there. But I don't know what we have in terms of sound here, so let's see what this one does.
Thank you and good evening.
Okay, I guess that works. How about this one?
That's good news, huh?
All right. I guess we've got these sounds. So let's try this one. It says fireworks. Let's see if this is a cool one. Who knows? Maybe we'll have to use the fireworks a little bit more as we go on throughout this proceeding. The fireworks one's actually pretty cool. All right. So our first award here on the Mixies goes to a team that at the start of the season I did not think would be in this position, a team that for many years was stuck in what I like to call ninth seed purgatory, a team that after many years of mediocre basketball and being in the 10th seed, looked like they were finally going to drop off the Mixies table. They have been a team that is picturesque Mixie, and I think it's only worthy that they get the first accolade tonight because, thanks to the expanded playoffs, it looks like they're finally going to get their chance. Yes, the Charlotte Hornets, with LaMelo Ball, Cody Zeller, Michael Kidd-Gilchrist is not there anymore, but it still feels like he is. Can you name any more Hornets? I guess you have all the young guys who they got from being in 10th seed purgatory. You got Malik Monk, 11 pick. You've got Miles Bridges, 12 pick. PJ Washington, 13 pick. These are just all the fruits of their many 10 seeds in the East finishes, was that they produced draft picks that weren't good enough to become anything special, but will still give you contribution at a cheap little price. Of course, Terry Rozier has been there for the past couple of years, but the two big additions for the Hornets, LaMelo Ball and Gordon Hayward, have taken the Hornets to the eighth seed in the Eastern Conference, even as the Eastern Conference gets better as a conference, at least better than it's been in the last 7 to 10 years. The Eastern Conference is eighth seed at the moment. The Charlotte Hornets are firmly entrenched in the mix. Our next team here on the Mixies is another Eastern Conference team that out of nowhere has seemed to emerge here back into the Mixies, because if you thought that this team had been left dead in the water back in January when it became clear that Bradley Beal wasn't going to get traded and we couldn't talk about the transaction, then you would be wrong, because with six consecutive wins, and Russell Westbrook now leading the league, I believe, in field goal percentage, if I'm not mistaken, or two-point field goal. I don't know exactly what the stat was. But with Russell Westbrook and Bradley Beal and now losing Denny, but they still have Rui Hachimura, and I dare you to name another player on the Washington Wizards. I dare you. You might throw out Thomas Bryant, but he's out for the season. I dare you to name someone else who plays for the Wizards. Correct answer, Ish Smith. But surprisingly, to my surprise this morning when I tuned into the standings, it appears the Washington Wizards, the 10th seed in the East, are firmly entrenched in the mix. See what this one does.
Come on down! You're the next contestant on the Price is Right!
Oh, that's a Price is Right one. All right. That's pretty cool. Might have to use that later on. Our next team in the proceedings, if you looked at the standings today, it would be strange that you'd think, why are they in the mix? Well, this team has become the darlings of basketball, haven't they? But they also find themselves just two games out from falling back into the play-in round. So they have to continue to be in the mix. And because of my faithful belief in regression to the mean, this team is going to probably be right in the thick of the race for the top seeds and avoiding a first-round play-in matchup. With a month left in the season, they have started to turn it around with a roster that looks relatively the same as last year's lackluster performance that netted them the 8th pick in the draft. But with Tom Thibodeau taking over the reins for these magical boys of the garden, Taj Gibson and Derrick Rose being his boys, but also the production value of Elfrid Payton and Alec Burks, Nerlens Noel, and of course, their two big stud players, their franchise cornerstones, all-star Julius Randle and number 4 pick averaging 17 points per game, R.J. Barrett. The New York Knickerbockers have gone from being mediocre, terrible, and downright putrid for years and now find themselves firmly entrenched in the mix. Moving on to our next recipient here on the Mixies. This person and this team have been one in the same so far this season. They should rename their team based off of this guy. Got a nice little ring to it, too, the New Orleans Zions. Because I don't understand why New Orleans is not better than what they are this season. New Orleans Pelicans should be one of the better teams in the Western Conference, yet they find themselves with the most blown double-digit leads of any team this season. They have two players averaging over 20 points a game, and Zion Williamson, for a 10-game stretch this year, was averaging 28 points, most of which came inside, was leading the league in offensive rebounds, and oh, by the way, he's shooting close to 60% from the field while also being a distributor. The man is 21 years old. He has a signature shoe. He is unbelievable, and yet they have some of the worst guard play in the NBA. They decided to roll with Lonzo and Eric Bledsoe. They traded J.J. Redick to Dallas. They got nothing in exchange for him. The New Orleans Pelicans, currently residing 4 games out of the final playoff spot in the Western Conference, but yet with 15 games left to play, pains me to say it, but since they have Zion Williamson and the team they're chasing is for some reason the San Antonio Spurs, the New Orleans Pelicans, a.k.a. the New Orleans Zions, are firmly entrenched in the mix. Let's see what this one does.
There's an old saying in Tennessee. I know it's in Texas, probably in Tennessee, that says, fool me once, shame on you. If fool me, you can't get fooled again.
Okay. Was that George Bush? I think that might have been George Bush.
Alrighty then.
That's our line. Anyways, our next team here on the Mixies, back to the Eastern Conference for a second. This team has had a fantastic run over the past 10 years, taking them from the obscure mediocrities of basketball, the fringes of even being a professional team, to one of the most well-respected organizations in basketball. They went to not one, but two Eastern Conference Finals. They won five division titles in this span, a sixth potentially coming in, if I remember correctly, a sixth last year before the pandemic ended up messing with the full season, but that would technically be a sixth division title. Two Eastern Conference Finals, one massive franchise-altering trade, and one NBA championship later, the boys of Canada, the Six, have found themselves hanging on by a thread. These boys from Tampa Bay, at least that's where they're located temporarily because of COVID, find themselves just a half game out of the final playoff spot in the Eastern Conference, the 11th seed, which is a complete disappointment for them this year. They're 25-34. Their team is very clearly in that Spurs purgatory where they're getting ready to rebuild. This was inevitable 2 years following the loss of Kawhi Leonard. Their window is very clearly closed, but boy, did they maximize that window while it was open. 9 games below .500. They have won 4 in a row, rebounding to put themselves in a position where they could sneak into the playoffs and get the brakes beat off them by one of these teams in the play-in round. The Toronto Raptors, still with Kyle Lowry, still rolling with OG Anunoby and Pascal Siakam. The Toronto Raptors are firmly entrenched in the mix. Our next team on the list is a team that probably thought that they would not be in this mixies this year. They thought that they might have a secured playoff spot, a fully healthy team. Made a lot of noise last year, probably should have been a second-round exit had they not had such bad luck with injuries at the beginning of the season. Well, lo and behold, those same injury problems flared up again out in the West Coast, the great Northwest. Lost C.J. McCollum for close to 2 months early on in the season. Yusuf Nurkic, after he missed the full season with a gruesome injury, I can't remember exactly what it was. I think it was a knee, maybe. He missed time with ankle injuries before returning this past year. Well, before, I'm sorry, returning this past month. And they've been just hanging on by a thread, fading slowly and steadily from the MVP conversation is Damian Lillard. And the team finds themselves in a position where they are fighting to get a full seven-game series. Right now, they sit just a half game above the Dallas Mavericks for seed number 7. They hold seed number 6, but fighting off seed number 7 and having to play a play-in round, they have to just keep fighting it off. They're also losers of 3 straight, so if they progress to the mean, then things should work out very nicely for these old Blazers up in Portland. But in the meantime, the Portland Trail Blazers, Damian Lillard, C.J. McCollum, Yusuf Nurkic, Robert Covington, now Norman Powell, are firmly entrenched in the mix.
That's good news, huh?
Isn't it? I guess.
I'm completely operational and all my circuits are functioning perfectly.
Are we allowed to use that sound? I'm not sure, but we'll roll with it for now. Next up on our Nick C's list as we approach the halfway point coming up here. This team made a good bit of a splash during this NBA trade deadline. If you joined us for our trade deadline special, a lot had to talk about this very team. With Zach LaVine in tow for at least the next two seasons, which now looks to be that Zach LaVine is not going to sign a long-term extension with this team, and they swung a deal, much like when Kristaps Porzingis was traded from the New York Knicks to the Dallas Mavericks a couple of years ago. They parted with a young player and a couple of first-round picks and a salary filler to go along. And lo and behold, when we look back now, we see that that trade worked out unbelievably well for New York. And when you look at this deal now for the Bulls of Chicago, they traded for Nikola Vukovic, and they gave up Wendell Carter Jr. They gave up Otto Porter's salary filler, and they gave up not one, but two first-round picks to the Orlando Magic. They wanted to go all in with Nikola Vukovic, despite the fact that the Orlando Magic's offensive rating did not change when Vucevic was on the floor. Nikola Vukovic is a bit of an empty stat player, a very good player, but a bit of an empty stat player. And so now he finds himself in Chicago, and the Bulls sit 10 games below 500, 24-34 on the season, the 12th seed in a very loaded Eastern Conference, a game back of the postseason, but not the 8th seed, the play-in round 10 seed. The Chicago Bulls are not back. Shout out to Trey Kirby, no dunks. The Chicago Bulls presently sitting 10 games back of 500 and a game back of the Red Hot Wizards and the Red Hot Raptors in the Eastern Conference. Zach LaVine, Kobe White, and Nikola Vukovic are firmly entrenched in the mix. See what this is.
5, 4, 3, 2, 1.
Pretty cool. Pretty cool. Next up on our Mixies list, the team that I think comes to embody the Mixies Awards every single year, especially as they've gone through their rebuilding phase and trading to acquire a generational superstar. This team, and actually both of the next two teams, come to embody what the Mixies are all about, just hanging around in the mix. They end up on this list. They often get a playoff berth. Often they are giving us some sort of exciting first-round matchup. Often they also miss the playoffs now and then, which is probably a perfect team to encapsulate the Mixies. Luka Doncic, the Donk. Without much of Kristaps Porzingis or really anyone's help this year, not Josh Richardson, which I really thought Josh Richardson was better than he is, and it seems like everywhere he goes, his team gets appreciably worse when they bring him in. Josh, maybe I'm just doing a correlation instead of a causation thing, but with Josh Richardson and Kristaps Porzingis and James Johnson and Tim Hardaway trying to be the supporting cast for Luka Doncic, the Dallas Mavericks, presently sitting as the 7th seed in the play-in round for the Western Conference, are firmly entrenched in the mix.
Bueller.
He's sick.
Like that sound. This is just fun. Let's just keep hitting buttons.
Come on down!
I like just hitting buttons. This is a fun version of this. I don't have the sound effects live. I have to add them in post-production. This has saved me a lot of effort here on the Mixies. It's just adding sound effects in here. All right. Next up, and I mentioned a little bit before, this team very much embodies the spirit of the Mixies. Much like Dallas, they have themselves a star player. They have a player who, well, their second-best player has been out for most of the year, and it's fitting that they're hovering right around 500 because they have just enough talent with your buddies, buddies, Tyus Jones and Kyle Anderson, they're just hanging around enough. And the eighth seed in the Western Conference feels just about appropriate, considering that last year they were the ninth seed in the Western Conference. Feels just about appropriate for them to hang around here as the embodiment of the Knicksies, because they are in the midst, right in the heart of the race for the final playoff seedings in the Western Conference. They're going to make it. They played in the play-in game last year. They're going to make the play-in game this year. It's going to make everything a little more interesting, but they also might get bounced, because who the hell thinks that Memphis can beat Golden State in a play-in round? But even as it stands, the Memphis Grizzlies with Ja Morant, Dylan Brooks, and hopefully at some point Jaren Jackson returning. Who else is on the Grizzlies? I don't think I can name enough Grizzlies for this to be worth it. Oh, they've got Xavier Tillman. That guy's always someone to root for. Michigan State, got to root for him. He's getting significant minutes on a playoff team. Strange. Oh, Jaren Jackson is back. Had 18 minutes the other night, so he's working his way back off the bench. Brandon Clark, preseason Hall of Famer, almost forgot about him. Justice Winslow had 3 points in 16 minutes. tough. And Grayson Allen is starting for some reason. I guess Desmond Bane gets the bulk of the minutes late in the game. But even as that stands, oh, they've got Sean McDermott. Cool. I don't think that's Dougie McBuckets is the guy. I don't know who Sean McDermott is. But anyways, with that being said, the Memphis Grizzlies, eighth seed in the Western Conference, are firmly entrenched in the mix. In the mix. Come on. Sound effects.
I'm completely operational and all my circuits are functioning perfectly.
Wow! I feel good!
Took him a little bit to get going there. Not sure what was going on there. Sound effects, you getting tired? Are we getting to the point where this is starting to wear thin? The joke is starting to wear thin a bit? Still got six more teams left, sounds. So I hope you're right in your best thick of things.
Come on down! You're the next professional on the Price is Right!
Well, okay. I mean, that one makes sense. But at least you're back in the swing of things.
Can I do that?
Yes, you did. And we're back in the swing of things here with the sound effects board. Thanks for coming back for me, sound effects board. I appreciate it. Next up on our list, we have the Indiana Pacers. Let's just put it out there. Let's just put their business out there. The Indiana Pacers are ninth in the Eastern Conference. They are the definition of mediocre. 4 games below .500 at this point. Every damn year, the Pacers are this team. Now, this year, they're finally going to go down a little bit. Why are they going to go down a little bit? Well, because they finally lost a little bit of their flair and flavor. They don't have T.J. Warren being the guy who drops 40 anymore. It used to be Malcolm Brogdon, and before that, it was Victor Oladipo, and it was Domantas Sabonis. But Domantas Sabonis might be gone for the year now, and they're only running an 8-deep lineup at this point. So, hey, who can blame the Indiana Pacers at this point? I mean, they're getting 28 a game for Caris LeVert, 41 minutes, 28 points in a win against OKC. Brogdon put up 29 and 15 rebounds. Wow, 29 and 15 rebounds. Jesus, that's got to just be because they're playing the Thunder. Wow. Let's try a game where they lost. Let's see what they've got in here. O'Shea Brissett. Can't sleep on O'Shea Brissett. Or Edmund Sumner. That sounds like the name of a character in like an HBO show, like from one of the older days, Edmund Sumner. Don't forget, obviously, you've got Justin Holiday, Dougie McBuckets, and Jakarr Sampson. I think they got suspended or something for a fight. But anyways, with all of that being said, the Indiana Pacers, the definition of mediocre without their all-star at this point in the season is the Pacers, who will get smacked on the other side of the head by someone in the playoffs, or at least that's what I think. Or the Pacers could do the thing the Pacers always do, which is win the play-in round, get to the first round, and get swept by some team. Usually they do it in the 5 seed. It'd be more stylish if they did it from the 9 seed this year. But with that being said, the Indiana Pacers are firmly entrenched in the mix. Just a few teams left here on the Knicks season. One of those teams is a team I've been really high on for much of the season. The idea that they are here in the Knicks season being the fifth seed in the Eastern Conference swells me up with pride, but they also find themselves just one game back from falling into that play-in round. And so, this, although Trae Young went down with a gruesome-looking injury yesterday, unfortunately, and although they're looking at a deep uphill climb to try and get at the Boston Celtics, who I think are still probably better than them, they were holding the 4 seed. Now they're the 5 seed. They're going to be hanging on by a thread as the New York Knicks pass them with a win streak, and they'll come back down to earth. Atlanta should be getting a full 4-7-game series come playoff time. But without Trae Young, I am left with some concerns. But as things presently stand, to fend off that play-in round, the Atlanta Hawks, who are no doubt of missing the playoffs, but doubt of having to play in the wild-card play-in round, with Trae Young and Bogdanovich and Danilo Gallinari and Chris Dunn's old rotting corpse, or I think he's only like 28, but still, kind of the same idea, the flesh-rotting career of Chris Dunn and Luke Will, who's back there now, and Solomon Hill and John Collins and Clint Capella and Kevin Herter. The Atlanta Hawks are firmly entrenched in the mix.
Bueller.
Love that sound. Next up here on the Knicksies, a team that we have, like with Toronto, a dynasty of past years, but now this has kind of become the expectation, is that Steph Curry's going to play with Andrew Wiggins and Kelly Oubre and Marquise Chris, who I think now might actually be on the Spurs, and they're going to play with Eric Paschal and no James Wiseman, which was supposed to help them big time coming into this season. Yet still, they hold on to that 9th seed in the Western Conference, trying to get to that play-in round and create some magic, because we all want to watch Steph Curry, and boy, have the Warriors been fun to watch for the past month or so. Steph Curry's got 11 games, averaging close to 40 points a game. It's been remarkable. I should be watching more Warriors basketball myself, regardless. Firmly entrenched in the mix, 9th seed in the West, the Golden State Warriors are in the mix.
Thank you and good evening.
Thank you and good evening. Our next team on this list definitely did not expect to be in this position this season. But here they are, presently the 6th seed in the Eastern Conference, trying to fend off another team that's feeling disappointed, who we'll get to next. They have 2 All-Stars, 2 young 23 and 24-year-old All-Stars, who are supposed to be the building blocks and the foundations of something great for this Boston Celtics team. And yet, we can't help but feel the disappointment of Boston's season once again. A team that probably should have beat Miami in the Eastern Conference Finals last year, but ended up falling just a tad bit short. And this year, never filling the hole of Gordon Hayward, they hoped to counter the addition of Tyler Hero by drafting Aaron Nesmith with the 14th pick in the draft. But look, Boston, you've got tons of rookies. I'm sure some of them will work out well, and you can circumvent the salary cap by beating the system with young, cheap talent. But unfortunately, until that happens, you find yourself stuck in this loop where your best-case scenario is to get blown out by Brooklyn. in the second round of the playoffs. And now finding yourself just a half game ahead of being in the play-in round. The Boston Celtics are firmly entrenched in the mix.
That's good news, huh?
Yes, it is.
Yeah, boy!
Mm-hmm. Next up here on the Knicksies, our final two teams here of the 15. The Miami Heat has had everything go wrong in the books. Injuries, COVID protocols, having a rap song written about Tyler Herro. Everything has gone wrong for Miami this year, and yet here the Miami Heat are, just a half game back of making it the 5 or 6 seed when it looked like for a while they were going to be hanging around the 10 seed come play-in round time. Now, Miami may have to go through the play-in round to get there, and yes, they're on a 3-game win streak that has propelled them over 500 once again. And yes, they've been the 13 seed in the East, but they've also been the 4 seed in the East. It's all about where you stand when the season comes to an end. So for Jimmy Butler, Tyler Herro, Duncan Robinson, Bam Adebayo, Victor Oladipo, and Maji Ilitsa, and the hopes of LaMarcus Aldridge for about 24 hours, the Miami Heat and Heat culture and Eric Spoelstra are firmly entrenched in the mix. Defending Eastern Conference champions.
Bueller.
Fireworks would have made that movie more interesting. Last but not least here on the Knicksies, I'll see if you can guess who it is. Go ahead. Try to guess it. This team always finds a way. I don't know how, considering just how depleted of talent that roster looks. It's a lot of young players, and those young players played often in the NBA bubble, but yet here, once again, they find themselves shooting for the play-in round, making the playoffs, hanging 4 games ahead of those feisty New Orleans Pelicans, the San Antonio Spurs, with DeMar DeRozan and Patty Mills is still technically there, and Jakob Poeltl is still technically there. But the big pieces of that team are Keldon Johnson and DeJounte Murray, Lonnie Walker, and Luka Samardžić, and, of course, Devin Vassell, who I was really high on at the time of drafting, but now looking back, they probably should have taken Tyrese Halliburton with the 11th pick in the draft. The San Antonio Spurs and Greg Popovich are firmly entrenched in the mix. And ladies and gentlemen, thus concludes the 2021 Knicksies Awards. Thank you to everyone who is a part of this year's Knicksies Awards. Thank you to all of our fine recipients for an amazingly fantabulous season. Thank you to our soundboard. Much appreciation for all of your work and effort throughout this event. Give one last round of applause to the soundboard. Or fireworks. Good choice by the soundboard.
There's an old saying in Tennessee. I know it's in Texas, probably in Tennessee, that says, fool me once, shame on.
The soundboard wanted to taunt me a little bit, but I had to override them real quick there. So, with that being said, let's dive into this Max Scherzer story real quick. And I know we're a week out from the NFL draft. I put NFL draft in the title because I assumed we'd get to it at some point. But with about 18 minutes left in the radio show, don't think we're going to get to the NFL draft here today. And you know what? Perfectly okay with me. Perfectly content to skip over NFL draft talk. There's going to be a lot of that next week. It's like trying to talk about Super Bowl week days before the event. It's just going to be this way, and that's okay. But let's talk about Max Scherzer for a second, because I saw a great story written on MLB.com. talking about a potential Max Scherzer trade coming up for the Nationals. And Max Scherzer hits free agency this offseason, and there's a very real possibility that the Washington Nationals will not be in contention. The Steven Strasburg contract, much like the Toronto Raptors, who won a championship just like 4 months before the Nationals won the World Series, much like them, their window is very clearly closed. They're trying to find talent wherever they can get it, whether it's Starlin Castro being their forward hitter or whatever it is. The Nationals are just trying to find some talent. And there was a great thing, and of course we all love the transaction in sports. The transaction could be just as fun as the events themselves. It's why, in the absence of football, people go berserk over free agent talk and NFL draft talk, for at least to fill the void of lacking content. And so something that's really interesting and really fun is the transaction. And Max Scherzer being traded, a superstar like Max Scherzer, has the power to turn tides in sport. It makes everything infinitely more interesting as we go forward into the next season. Well, I'm sorry, go into the postseason, because Max Scherzer represents a legitimate shift in power. In the story, they talked about Justin Verlander and how in 2017, a last-second trade between Justin Verlander and the Houston Astros in waiving the no-trade clause allowed him to go to Houston, turn his career around, and ultimately win another Cy Young Award in 2019. And Max Scherzer could have a similar type market coming up for the Nationals. Desperately need to retool that farm system. You know, Carter Kieboom hasn't been the greatest prospect in the world. He was a top 10 overall, and he's been all right. He hasn't been terrible. He's been all right. And Juan Soto's gone onto the injured list a couple of times, but he's been incredible at his first couple of years. But other than that, the Nationals are just trying to scrape together some talent. If you look at the lineup from the last Nationals game, and obviously their bat is not their strength, but if I just take a 1-0 victory over the Cardinals from yesterday, I mean, it's Andrew Stevenson, it's Josh Harrison, Trey Turner, and they traded for Josh Bell and plug Kyle Schwarber in, who gives you the big home runs now and then, but just not effective enough. And Starlin Castro, Victor Robles, Alex Avila is their catcher, and that makes me sad that Alex Avila is still trying to be a catcher out here. You can go to the day before, they still have Yan Gomes trying to get in there, but it's pretty much the same lineup as before. And obviously, Patrick Corbin is a great free agent pickup. And pitching is their strong suit. They have Brad Hand. They have Daniel Hudson. Like, of course, pitching is their strong suit. And yet, I look at the Nationals and I say, you've got to trade Scherzer. Mostly because I want the content, of course. Well, I shouldn't say mostly. I want the content, but also it makes no sense given the position the Nationals are in. They could be kind of competitive, but you look at that division and they're kind of fighting against the Marlins at this point. Because we know that the Mets are good. We know that the Braves are good. The Phillies appear to be all right this year. They're hanging around 500. And the Marlins are also hanging around 500. But I think the only team that I can say the Nationals are better than is probably the Marlins. And so Washington, if you're going to hang around that third and fourth spot in the National League East, and Scherzer's going to be a free agent anyways, it'll at least set things in motion for like a gut punch reality check, because it's going to be a long time before the Nationals are good again. It might take a lot of effort. Unless you can convince Scherzer to re-sign, it's something I hadn't considered, but now that I hear it, it makes all the sense in the world that they would be ready to move Max Scherzer with his contract expiring and them having Strasburg on the books for a long time, even though he's only made 4 starts across the last 2 seasons since signing his contract extension. It's just been a tough road for the Nationals. And I think I agree with this story now that it's kind of the business has been put out there about where the Nationals stand. And this is a difficult thing about having these things come to an end, is that when you're Washington and you've been as good as you've been for a sustained period of time, knowing that you've been bad, but they're also a pretty new franchise, to be fair. But knowing you've been as bad as you've been and getting to be good for about a decade, parting with the things that made you good, like 6 years of Max Scherzer been a big part of it. He'll probably go in the Hall of Fame as a Washington National. Having to pick apart pieces of the championship roster, and really just a roster that puts you in playoff competition every year, it's always tough, but when you finish fifth in the NL East last year and you're about to finish fourth this year, it's just a certain reality check. And this is the difficult thing, that sometimes the pivot is important, and this is just a general thing in life. The pivot is pretty important. And in this case, the pivot for the Nationals is going to be the next whatever iteration of that team. Might be a long time before they're good again, because I think they're probably – they just traded for Josh Bell. They signed Kyle Schwarber. They signed Brad Hand. They were going for it, and it's just not working. And so at a certain point, I think it's just an acceptance that you can stay mediocre, but you're going to have to watch the Max Scherzers of the world leave in free agency. I don't think these 2 months matter enough. For that, I think Josh Bell probably represents something that's a disposable asset down the road, unfortunately, as much as that word is probably thrown around too much. Josh Bell, you could flip and recoup some of what you got him away for. It's the way that you remain mediocre for a long time. There's no path upward, and there's no path towards, you know, reclaiming some of the pieces that help you down the road. It's a tough break, and a lot of teams get stuck in this cycle, and the Nationals might be one of those franchises, because I look at the Nationals and I don't really see anything special about them as to why they're going to remain competitive like the Cardinals, who always win 85 games, even if they're kind of just stuck in the middle, trying to, you know, land the next Matt Holliday, or land the next Albert Pujols, or land the next Yadier Molina, or the next Adam Wainwright. Just kind of waiting to see if one of those comes around, but in the meantime, they're just going to win 82 games anyways, and sometimes make the playoffs and sometimes not. I don't think the Nationals are that, partly because I just watched them finish fifth, and I just read you off that roster, and they were playing against the Cardinals, and that roster looks nothing like what the Cardinals roster looks like, which is just kind of a tough break for Washington. But this is something I hadn't considered, and it's obviously down the road because we're not quite in trade deadline season for baseball. We're still in the mode where we're making football trades at this point. So we'll see what things end up working out for the Nationals. But this Max Scherzer trade has been brought on my radar, and I think I kind of like the idea. Think that it makes a lot of sense for Washington down the road. It's obviously not going to happen tomorrow, but it just makes too much sense for Washington to make that move. And it'll be interesting to see how this all plays out across the next couple months once we actually start to see the separations that we're pretty sure are there. But we can't see it right now because, you know, we're kind of stuck in the middle of everyone overreacting because their team is really good or really bad. Just kind of where we're at right now. Let's talk about this Bill Belichick story. I brought this in because I found it interesting. Seth Wickersham was talking about how Seth Wickersham is the guy who wrote basically the de facto story that's like Belichick is unhappy being with the Patriots, and that him and Belichick don't really have a good relationship at this point. And so, or I'm sorry, him and Brady don't have a good relationship. He's Belichick. Him and Brady don't have a good relationship. And now there's talk like, yeah, Belichick was kind of like peeking at jobs. It was kind of an interesting story that I was like, oh, this seems to be like an interesting idea because he's in a weird place. He's in a weird place where he's accomplished all he wants to accomplish, and at a certain point he's going to get the freedom to make decisions that he has in New England, but maybe he doesn't want to keep working with those people. And this is the difficult thing that he has to come to terms with, is just where do I want to go with the next however many years? If this isn't working with the Patriots, if Brady has too much control, because remember, Brady was the person who basically got Belichick to a point where he got Jimmy Garoppolo traded, or he basically forced the hand of the organization to trade Jimmy Garoppolo. And so this is the interesting place that I find with Belichick actively, or like at least pitching his idea for looking at other jobs. It's like, this is not simply a case of this is just keeping all his options open. if he were thinking about it, then he could do it, but he's not, like, ready to make the move. Because, again, that's a ballsy move. To walk away from that at that age, that's a ballsy move. And I don't know if that's what Belichick wants for the next stage. I don't know if the Patriots are standing by him or if it is like his last ride season or his last chance to reconstruct the roster before he retires. And I put retires in air quotes because I think a lot of that would be Kraft kind of asking him to leave but trying to do it on his own terms, kind of like how the University of Penn State tried to do it with Joe Paterno, but then he stuck around too long and had to watch everything he built crumble when the Jerry Sandusky stuff came around. I think it's something similar with Belichick, where how long is he going to be allowed to stay around, and is he plotting where his landing spot is? Is that retirement? Is it going into a front office role? Is it becoming an advisor with the Patriots but not being the coach? Is it a full-time GM? What does his retirement look like? I don't know. I also know 20 years somewhere is a long time to be working with someone. And at a certain point, I think when the decades start blending together, that becomes a difficult proposition to say, hey, we should probably go our separate ways for our own sake. For our own sake and our own sanity, we should probably just go in our different directions. And you know what? Maybe that's the point that Belichick's at right now. It's kind of an interesting dynamic that you look around and you're like, hey, this is going to be interesting to watch. Like, he was reportedly, like, peeking at the Miami job. Washington was interested, or at least got the hint that he was interested. The Giants, where he coached as a coordinator for a number of years, had their opening with Pat Shurmur, and he was peeking around knowing that Brady was on his way out and whether or not he would jump ship before Brady jumped ship, a la Kyrie Irving and LeBron, where Kyrie dumped LeBron before LeBron had the chance to dump him. Would something like that happen? That was the possibility that was being thrown out there. And so that story was really interesting with Belichick and with Brady. Again, it was like Seth Wickersham talking about on a podcast. And I just find that to be so interesting because of just how these dynamics work where you've been in a place for 20 years. How does it work? Because Al Davis always had the idea, like, after 10 years, everyone's kind of accomplished all they can accomplish, and they should probably go their separate ways. It's just relationships wear out after a while. And this was the interesting part about Belichick and Brady, is just that they've been, you know, they were together 20 years, and eventually they had an amicable breakup. They needed to go their separate ways, and they were pondering their exit. And for Belichick, it was a longer thing. And the story, basically, the way they describe it, is that the 68-year-old Belichick may have pondered his options for a potential exit, which is interesting because Belichick is not always that guy who is, like, super interesting and does interesting stuff, but this was something that at least raises an eye a little bit. It was interesting to see it play out the way that it played out. So, ladies and gentlemen, thank you for stopping in here today to the Take It Easy radio show. I hope you enjoyed the mixies. If you like more content like that, follow our podcast, Take It Easy, wherever it is that you get podcasts. It's a really fun, enjoyable experience that we do it every day, different fun topics, 40 minutes to an hour plus or so. We talked to our buddy Canadian Cutler today. That's a fun episode that you can check out. All that stuff is available. And, of course, follow us on Instagram, Take It Easy Podcast, and Comical Sports Memes. So with that being said, ladies and gentlemen, take it easy. We'll talk to you guys again next week. NFL draft week, people. Take it easy.